Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. And we're talking to you from our studio on the waves, where we have had beaucoup technical problems, and Ken has busted his bucket trying to get things set up so that we could come out on time, because this is the July episode 231 of the RV Navigator podcast.
That's July 2024.
Okay.
And you are listening to us as we are sailing on the North Sea, and it is cold.
We chose a cruise that went north since we sweated last summer on a cruise, and we've gone from one extreme to the other. When our cruise stopped in Boston, it was 97 degrees, and now it is 64 and has been kind of wet and drizzly and cold. You just can't get it into the 70s where we would like to be.
Unless you drive your motorhome.
To the 70s.
To the 70s, which is, of course, what we try to do. So this month has gone by fairly quickly. Even with the cruise, it seems like July is just around the corner, and we are looking forward to July 4th.
Camping weekend for most of you,
yes.
Just not for us.
Of course.
We have been thinking about camping a lot because the cruise that we are on is virtually duplicating the itinerary that we did with an RV caravan, where we spent about 6 weeks altogether in the Canadian Maritimes. That caravan focused on Newfoundland, which we are not stopping at on this cruise, but we are revisiting many of the ports. And as we have said to you many times, when you are on a cruise, you only get a taste of an area. You don't really get to investigate it in depth, which can be frustrating, but since we've already done the in-depth, we're...
Exactly. We've done the in-depth already, and now we're doing the superficial.
We're getting a taste of the place and a lot of yummy tastes because we are on a Silver Sea cruise. Definitely a la-di-da increase from some of the cruises that we have spent most of our younger days on. I have been enjoying fresh lobster every day. I'm going to grow gills by the end of this cruise. And the
crabs and lobster bisque. And
the cooking is very gourmet. Luckily, the portions are small, but for me, they're probably not small enough.
But we're trying. Yes, this has been a very different cruise than we've had in the last one, where we were packed with people on the Royal Caribbean. However, this is another Royal Caribbean-owned line.
Which gives us some status.
But this is their luxury upscale line. And I think this ship is only about 380 passengers and 302 crew, so the service is great, and there's never a line for anything. And so we've been pretty pleased with this. It's funny about the fares, because one of the things that's really surprised me is that when I look on my shipboard account, the account balance is zero, because this ship includes everything. It includes the shore excursions, it includes gratuities, it includes Wi-Fi, it includes everything.
And we paid for it all up front.
And you pay for it all up front. So although the upfront cost seems high, it actually is within reason, at least, of what you're going to pay if you're nickel and dimed. Oh, it includes all the drinks that you want. And we just booked to Holland, and we got the got it all package, which is $50 a day per person. And that includes Wi-Fi and gratuity. Does not include the gratuity.
Drinks.
So you have to look at cruise fares in a balanced way, because they are not all, well, they're definitely not all the same, but some of them are more inclusive than others. And this line just includes everything. So
this is our second Silver Sea cruise. We took the first one as COVID was winding down, and it definitely impacted that cruise, because the wonderful crew started disappearing because they were all coming down with COVID, and they had to close some of the facilities on that particular ship. So we were looking forward to giving Silver Seas another try, a fair try, where we can really experience what they are noted for, which is wonderful service, including a butler for every cabin that we don't know what to do with because we're usually pretty self-resourceful people. And we don't know
done a few cruises, so we know what goes on.
We don't know what to ask him to do. But anyway, the service and the level of attention to detail is so wonderful that we have booked another cruise with them for next spring. So you will be hearing about Silver Seas again when we head to the South Pacific, and we'll probably complain about sweating. We never get it quite right.
Well, the beginning of this trip, we spent some time in New York. We always love New York.
Always.
And New York is this place you could spend months and months, I think. And we didn't do any museums.
We could have.
I know, but
it was nice outside.
I don't like museums. But we did the Empire State Building again. Yeah. Which has new
exhibits
and a new observation deck on the 102nd level, which is very interesting. And then we did another one, the Vanderbilt Tower.
And in both high rises, we felt like we were the only Americans there. We were surrounded by foreign tongues. And we felt proud of our country. Both of the towers gave a nice impression of how they were built and how New York City is. And we could see why everybody wanted to be there, including us.
Yes, and the time we were there, it was in the 70s and very pleasant, just before it got really hot. We always know that when it gets hot in Chicago, which it was as we left, it's going to be in New York in the next couple
days.
But
later.
We left, and so we were on this cruise, which we will be on until the beginning of July. Visiting a harbor, a town in Canada, from a cruise ship is a different experience, though, because you're docked usually right downtown.
On a
driving trip, we don't usually go downtown very often. And you have to find a place to park and blah, 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 blah. But here, when you're on a ship, you actually get to see some new things that we hadn't had a chance to see when we drove because we didn't want to drive into the city center.
I think we are here a bit early.
So it is interesting.
That the high season for this part of the world is fall color time.
Yes.
And we are here in June. So we have heard that some of the ports where we have docked right downtown quickly and easily are sometimes so full of cruise ships that some of them have to stay at anchor and tender in.
Yeah.
Of course, we prefer getting to meet the Canadians as a small number of passengers. It's just a much more personable experience. And even on this ship, there are not that many Americans. We have enjoyed the company of a lot of Aussies who have flown all the way to see another country in the Commonwealth.
Yes, so, and it's very interesting to find that this ship does not have but maybe 25-30% Americans, even though it left from New York.
And
we met a couple from Boston. That was strange.
And there are quite a few Europeans on board, Germans. So it's a very mixed bag, which keeps it interesting.
Yeah, which makes it nice for us. Okay, enough of cruising. Time for RVing, or at least some other topics. First topic, I talked last month about Perplexity, an AI-based search engine.
Tool.
And I've got to say that over the last month, I have used it quite a lot, and I've found it to be far superior to Google or whatever search engine you might use, because it comes back with a narrative about the topic that you're asking. And I asked it some questions, and it comes back with, as I say, a description of the answer to your question. So I had some problems with one of my cameras. And rather than referring to the manual, I instead just typed in the question, and it came back with an exact description about how to fix the problem that I had encountered. And that's really cool. Unfortunately, it couldn't fix the GarageBand problem that we were having this morning. But it did give us a description of how to fix it, but I just couldn't figure it out. We were getting echo. I hope there's no echo in this.
Oh, he has
we
tried
were trying
so
to
hard.
Everything was working good, except we were having echo. And I don't like echo in my... Although you're probably getting room acoustics right now. But
this is the best we can do on a ship.
The best we can do on this in this room. I would give Perplexity a try. Now, it's an app if you have a tablet or a phone. And it is a website, perplexity.ai, that is on a laptop. More technology. did you know Starlink has lowered its price? We've been thinking about getting Starlink, and they have lowered the price of their standard dish by $100. But, you know, this is not really all that important because you're going to pay $150 a month anyway, and so the cost of the hardware is not really a real deal breaker. But it's still lowered to $499 from $599, so that's some incentive to get a new satellite dish. We plan to, before we go to Alaska, get our own Starlink. And there's actually more Starlink news. So although I like the Gen 3 dish that we've talked about several times, and I also have talked about the mini dish, and apparently Starlink has a soft beginning of the mini dish, and it has been quite a disappointment. Ooh, so what am I going to do? So the mini dish is much smaller. It has less power consumption, and that's one of the problems with the other full-size dish is that it is quite a hog in terms of power. It uses like 150 watts, which if you're on boondocking could be a significant amount of power to pull from your batteries. But although the hardware for the mini dish seems to be really quite exciting, and of course we've been waiting for it for quite a long time, Starlink has chosen to really kind of hobble it, I guess, and I can't quite figure out why. They've sent out emails to their customers saying that the mini dish is available starting in July, although I have read a couple of people who have already gotten it, and this is early July, so I guess that's to be expected. And they offer it to current users for an additional $30 a month. Now that's really a huge disappointment. That means you have to have two dishes, or you have to have Starlink at home, and then they want you to use this for your roaming capability, which is an interesting idea. And it has data caps, which is going to really cause some problems for people who want to use it. They say that it'll be only 100 megabits a second, so I guess, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to impact it, but it is going to be mobile so that you can use it while you're driving down the road. So that could be quite interesting. I guess we're just going to have to stay tuned for the Mini, because I was going to just get the Mini when it came out, which it's been rumored for months, but all of a sudden it just popped up and people have been actually getting it.
I don't know. I don't follow Starlink closely like you do, but I feel like every month or two we're talking about changes that make me think that overall the company is still sorting itself out and deciding how to deal with people like us who want to travel, who want to have lots of data without a lot of electricity consumption. Yeah. And have it be reasonably priced. The wish list is long.
Well, that's exactly what we were expecting with the Mini. You know, we were expecting kind of the same sort of plans that they had for the larger one, and it would just be a smaller hardware footprint, which is always good for travelers like us. But apparently they've decided, and you know, this is something that could change quickly.
And probably will. And
so I don't know. I'm going to wait, I guess, again. I wasn't planning on getting it till the fall anyway, so we'll
see.
Don't
buy it till you need it.
Don't buy it till you need it. My wife's motto.
And even then you have to have an argument with me first.
And something else we've been thinking about buying is the Tesla truck.
We have? looks like Back to the Future. What a strange-looking vehicle. I read about a man who ordered one a long time before they came out, and he didn't even quite know what it was he was getting. And in the meantime, he moved from a single-family home with a driveway to an apartment complex with a lot where he was supposed to park his vehicle. And this thing is so big and wide, it doesn't fit in his parking place.
Well, it is a truck. I mean, it is a replacement for a pickup truck.
It's so wide.
And it has a bed. I mean, so it is quite cool. I think we talked once about the Long Long Honeymoon. Sean there thinking about, or he put in an order for one years ago, literally, and was wondering whether he should buy it to tow his Airstream. That'd be very cool. The silver, literally, the stainless steel silver truck pulling
a silver Airstream.
That would be
a sleek setup.
That would be a very sleek setup. But he actually did a test of one. He had a friend or somebody who has a brand new Tesla truck. Of course, it's all electric. And they were quite effusive about how comfortable it was on the inside and how nicely it drove and everything. The bottom line was, pulling his trailer, he would get probably less than 100 miles per charge. And as with all electric vehicles, that is a fairly big problem. Although they decided that because most people don't tow anything, that the 330-mile capacity of the batteries was probably enough for most people. You could fill the bed with stuff and drive quite a distance, but towing an RV or for RV purposes, oh, it did have a plug, so that you could plug in your RV and use the batteries from that. That would make boondocking very cool. Anyway, you might want to take a look at this. I have a link to this, of course, on the website for this month, and that is episode 231 of the RV Navigator.
It would be good to rob a bank before you get too serious about purchasing this truck.
Oh, yeah. Well over $100,000. Wow. And this guy got the Founders package or something like that, which was an extra 20 grand. It's worth watching this video. It's a few minutes long. Even if you're not interested in using it for RV purposes, it's still quite an interesting idea.
And while we're talking about costs, we always wonder whether it would be cheaper, especially for people who do not have our lifestyle and only have one or two trips a year in their RV, whether it's cost effective to have one. And we read a very interesting article written by somebody who full time's in an RV, which surprised me, who found out that it was cheaper in her case. She was somewhere on the Atlantic Ocean in eastern U.S., that the hotel she was going to book was cheaper than the campground that she was in. And she says, I love the RV lifestyle. I love having our own bed, sheets, towels, etc., the ability to buy groceries and cook. I love being mobile and having a variety of scenery. I love sitting by a campfire. Ditto, ditto, ditto. But I have to admit that it was cheaper in this case when I factor in our diesel fuel, insurance, maintenance, etc.
Which you have to pay 12 months of the year.
Yeah, that it would be cheaper to stay in an oceanfront hotel, which are never cheap anyway. So that was kind of interesting to me. And I think a major factor in this article was the fact that she was trying to camp in the eastern U.S. because there is less real estate available in the eastern U.S.
No,
it's all built up. Campgrounds tend to be small and at a premium. There are a lot of big cities on the east coast. Yep. And as soon as you're near an urban area, there are fewer campgrounds, and they do just cost more. Because this article made me flash back to the summer when I totaled our RV. We were on our way to Colorado to go to a dude ranch. After we picked up the pieces from the accident, we jumped in our car and continued with that plan.
Oh, that's true.
And said we would use the money that we had planned for our camping vacation and just stay out in Colorado as long as we could. And we came home, I think, about 2 weeks earlier than we would have if we had just stayed in our RV. And so even at that point in my life, when I was quite traumatized at the thought of even being in an RV again, it was clear that if we wanted to travel as much as we do, that the RV was the more affordable choice. But that was out west.
Well, and I don't want to give a lot of pushback on this. I mean, this is their perception of the travel experience, and, you know, that's valid. But with that said, they are talking about that the campground was more expensive than the hotel. And that's true, but let's look at all the other factors. They did have to go out to dinner or to three meals a day. They did have to probably fly there.
No, they drove there.
Most of the time, if you were going out west or someplace, you'd probably fly, which would be quite a lot more expensive than driving, even our motorhome. And we like the comfort of the motorhome. So obviously, the choice of how to travel is each individual person's or couple's choice. With your family, you might really enjoy doing the camping experience, but you might find a good deal on oceanside room, too.
I'm flashing back to another memory, very far from the ocean. We were in West Texas,
driving
through through Texas.
Oh, yes.
And we checked into a campground that I think at that time was listed as $25 a night, which seemed pretty reasonable to us at that point. And they only charged us $15. And we said,
that's right.
Well, that's very nice of you. What's the deal? And they said, well, we want to make sure that the campground costs less than the hotel in town. After you've been in West Texas for any time, you will understand why there were very few people around and we were just passing through. But
and with camping prices going up to $80 and $100 a night, this is a question. But of course, I think that hotels have gone up a commensurate amount.
Sure.
So it's, I don't know. It's always a crapshoot, and you need to carefully consider how you're going to travel.
And if you think about it too much, you'll get a headache. So just get in your vehicle and go somewhere.
We bought the motorhome, and so, damn it, we're going to use it.
Yep.
Well, we do care how much it costs, but it's paid for, and it's ours, and we don't have to worry about
it. And so far, we've been able to fix it when things were not quite right.
Oh, this month is going to be exciting because we're getting lithium batteries at the end of the
month. We'll have a lot to talk about.
A lot to talk about next month. Another topic that was quite interesting, I've talked quite a lot about Tableau. The Tableau is a device which allows you to record off of the air with an antenna, and it allows you to record it, and then you can stream it throughout your house, and you can view it any place that you are, if you have a decent amount of internet, of course. We can't stream it here, but we have streamed Tableau all around the world, frankly. And they've got a new Tableau, which is very cool, because it records streaming channels, not paid streaming channels, not Netflix and those, but many of the other streaming channels. It'll allow you to record them. And one of the problems that I have is that I don't mind watching over-the-air TV, but
he hates commercials. His hand starts twitching toward the remote.
But I can't fast forward through the commercials. And so apparently the new Tableau has recording capability for many of the channels that are usually only streamable. So you might want to take a look at that if you're thinking about traveling and you'd like to watch channels that are not usually on the TV, but are available through the internet, and that would give you the capability to record those, and then hopefully you'll be able to zip through those commercials without any hesitation. And on the cruise ship here, we have to watch the channels as they are streamed.
And you don't have 400 to choose from either, you poor thing.
Well, they're doing pretty good.
I mean,
there are probably 25 channels. Some of them, of course, are in foreign languages, or Australian, which is pretty much a foreign language to us.
He thought he was going to watch the news on ABC, and then he found out it was the Australian Broadcasting Company.
Yeah, they have this. One of the channels is the ABC channel. I thought, whoa, that's cool. I'm going to be able to watch the regular ABC, but it's Australian Broadcast Service.
Broaden your horizons.
Or a broadcast corporation, anyway. Well, we want to give everybody equal time on the TV, so no recording, and so no getting rid of the commercials, and those get to be really hard to watch after a while. We have e-bikes.
I think we've talked about them.
Yes. Ours fold up because we like to put them inside the car so that they don't get out of the weather, and so that they don't get full of dust and rain and all sorts of other good stuff. But I got to say, I do prefer a big tired bike. Ours have 20-inch tires, and I think I would prefer a bigger bike if I just was buying one. But if you buy a bigger bike, then you got to buy
it. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, and e-bikes are heavy. Boy, you see these bumper mount bike racks on the back of a trailer, and I have to think two 70-pound bikes on the back of a trailer on a bumper hitch just is a disaster waiting to happen. They're going to fall off because e-bikes are heavy.
Could it destroy the balance of your rig too?
Well, you're putting 150 pounds as far back as you can put it.
Yeah.
But there are better choices, and I think hitch mounted is one of those. And we have an article here that you'll want to look at if you're looking at e-bikes and you're looking at a way to travel with them. It's looks at new hitches that are heavy duty enough to handle an e-bike, and of course none of them are bumper mounts, so that you might want to consider taking a look at this article, which I have archived for your purposes.
RV Navigator website.
This is just an advertisement for
ourselves.
for
some people. Let's pat ourselves on the back.
Another thing you might want to watch if you're into fifth wheels, which we like, you might want to take a look at the top five family-friendly fifth wheels. And this is our friend Josh, the RV nerd. He does a test of these. It's a tricky question because it depends on the family. However, he does put in the caveat that five family fifth wheels in the video would be the five best for his family, but maybe your family and his have some things in common, and maybe not. The five family fifth wheels on this list are all substantially large, and many of them are literally apartments on wheels. So you might want to take a look at this video. It'll give you something to think about, and of course, there is no one answer for everybody, but this will give you some common problems and things to look at if you're a family looking for a fifth wheel. And I think a lot of people are these days.
And when you're looking for a rig that sleeps more people than the two of us, you also need to keep in mind that they're going to come with stuff. And we've been in some RVs where you could put 10 family members, but they couldn't bring any stuff. Or you would have to make and unmake beds every day. So there are many factors to consider, but it's good to have his recommendations since he's in the biz.
Yes. And now we talk back about technology. You're excited about this. But for people like you who don't really understand the technology, this is actually something the government has done for as a benefit. They're requiring broadband labels, which are designed to provide clear, easy to understand, and accurate information about the cost and performance of high-speed internet services. You'll often hear me talking about megabits a second, and that I do a speed test when I'm logging on to a service, whether it be Starlink or whether it be my home bandwidth or one that we're finding in a hotel or a cruise ship, and I'm getting very slow service here on the cruise ship.
So where do I find these labels?
That's the real trick, isn't it?
Well, when I'm looking at a nutrition label, I know where to look, but where are these?
We're used to the food labels.
Yeah, so that's what
they,
it looks like.
Where they list the typical ingredients in all types of food. So this is a label which is very similar to that, or kind of like a sticker on a car, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows for apples-to-apples comparison of broadband services. That's your internet service. So that you don't really have to paw through all of the statistics to find the comparisons. They're designed to provide easy-to-understand, clear, and accurate information about the cost and performance of high-speed internet services. The labels are modeled after the FDA nutrition labels and are intended to help consumers comparison and shop for internet service plan that suits them best.
So again, I ask, where do I see this label?
Well, it's been my impression and my little brief research that they are buried deep on the company's website, but they have to be there. So you can find these, and then you bring up to them, and this would be comparing Starlink to the wired service at home, or the various cellular services, comparing them to see if the speeds are comparable, and the cost of it, too. And apparently, the companies are not very excited about this, so they bury this information deep in the website someplace.
Well, that's no surprise, huh?
Yeah, so...
Could you use this perhaps as a bargaining chip, too, when someone's trying to sell you a...
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. You could say, this is what it cost me for the competitor. These days with cellular, we have actually quite a few services, but we have both Xfinity and AT&T wired choices, and so it would be interesting to compare them. So we can move on. Oh, I talk about...
Commercials.
Oh, here I go again. Hold my hand.
It won't help.
It won't help. Amazon Prime joins the herd and puts advertisements into your viewing.
It's been going for a while. January 29th is starting.
And of course, Netflix has already had commercials, and the big problem is you can't fast forward through them.
They're going to be driving us back to cable TV again.
I know. Yes. They're going to drive us back to... It's unbelievable that streaming has so many commercials these days. It's just terrible. Now, seven reasons you should consider cable TV instead of streaming. I can't believe I'm seeing this article. Can you?
I'm still wondering what happened when streaming services started. They seemed to have these massive budgets, and they were making things right and left. And instead of making a nice 2-hour movie, they stretch it into a 10-episode show, which is a major lifetime commitment to watch in its entirety. And now they seem to be squeezing the two nickels together again.
And there are so many of them that you could easily pay what you paid for cable.
And then some.
And then some, right. So this article talks about the 7 reasons to consider cable TV instead of streaming. 1, more natural discoverability. You can just kind of scroll through the channels, which you can't do with streaming very easily.
Right.
Breaking your binging habit.
I don't have a binging habit.
3, locking in your price.
Well, theoretically, you could lock it in with a streaming service, too. You just have to pay attention.
And you're always saying, I want to watch this program, so I'm going to get this service, and I'm going to watch another program, and so that they could fluctuate quite a lot, whereas if you get the cable, you can just lock it in for a monthly fee.
I think the real answer here to saving money is not to watch stuff when you first hear about it and when it's new, because if you just sit on it for 2 years, it'll end up being free, or you can get it from the library, or
yeah.
Buy a DVD with many of them programs on the same DVD. We still have choices.
The next one, you can still get on-demand entertainment. Yeah. Netflix is still optional. I don't know if that's a 7 reason. It makes sports much easier. Yes, I think so. Because you probably get ESPN and all those channels that carry sports, and they're just a click away. You can watch live TV anywhere.
Or maybe we just need to start reading more books.
Could be. Have we cut the cord while RVing? No, not really. We still have our satellite dish. But Sling TV is free streaming DVR. Sling has just introduced a third outcome. Its freestanding service is getting 10-hour DVD that works with...
It's getting a 10-hour DVR.
Thank you. A DVR that works with hundreds of free streaming channels. This makes FreeStream the first free ad-supported service to let you skip through the ads.
Oh, they heard you.
Oh, with so many free streaming options and so little to distinguish them, being able to record is like a breakthrough. Oh, that's a cool idea.
That's what we should do.
Maybe we should look at the Sling free TV streaming DVR.
The other thing that is very clear to me is whenever we think we have figured it out, things change again, and if you're worried about how much you're going to cost in total, you need to keep an eye on all these services and their latest tricks and how they're gathering up the money for themselves. As we told you, we are on this cruise with a lot of people from other countries besides our own, and it's fun to notice differences in word choice, difference in habits, difference in eating habits especially. This got us to looking at some articles about how to notice an American when they travel abroad. I think this is somewhat unfair because each nationality has its own idiosyncrasies, and one of the ones they comment about is the way that we dress. And I would certainly say that when I see a European in the United States, I can tell they're a European by how they dress, because you buy the clothes that are available where you live. But some of these things were a little less obvious to me. The comment was that the CIA trains American agents to not lean on things if they go undercover because Americans are always leaning when they are standing around. I had not noticed this to be a trait of my fellow countrymen, but I have to admit that now that my back aches much of the time, I do a lot of leaning myself.
MI6 trains British agents to lean on everything if they go undercover in America, because Americans lean on everything anytime they can and while they're standing around. So it works both ways. You have to train the American agents not to lean, and you have to train foreign agents to lean. And, of course, another interesting fact is that we always have a special way of writing our dates on official forms, and this gets people in trouble. Is it 6-7-24 is, for us, June 7th, 2024, whereas a European will read that as
July 6th. So especially when you're doing forms to enter a country, that can easily cause you problems. You really need to pay attention to, and I think we're the only ones who do
that's just what I was going to say. That's unique to us, right. And you can tell an American because that's the way they write the date. Oh, what do you do, dear listener?
Well, it depends if they're Americans or not. Not all of our listeners are Americans.
We'd like to hear from our listeners, and maybe they need to tell us about this. Oh, they could probably tell us about some other things that Americans do. Oh, yes, listeners, please send us some comments. Distances are different. Anything under 4 hours, I would agree with this. Anything under 4 hours is close by.
My mother, who was from Vienna, was just appalled when we bought a house that was a 45-minute drive from her, because she felt like we were on the other side of the moon, where in Austria you can drive across the width of the country in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It really gave her a different feel for distances.
And I think we've maybe told the story, but we were in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we met a couple that was traveling throughout the United States in 2 weeks. And they didn't realize how big the United States was. They had left from Dallas 2 weeks, and they had driven 2 days. And they said, we drove 2 days, and we didn't leave Texas. We were they were in Albuquerque now, and they had planned on going on a grand circle around the entire United States
including
in 2 weeks.
Florida,
including Florida. And our eyes just popped out of our heads and said, you've got to be kidding. And I think it was sinking into them that they were not going to be very far. Even after
2 weeks,
2 weeks they would be very, very optimistic to be able to do all of our national parks, which they were planning on doing. Now, likewise, we think about driving from Paris to Rome as
a major journey.
You have to go across several countries, and it's really a day's drive or so,
especially at the speed they drive.
We do have different perspectives on distance, and 4 hours, no problem, easily drive 4 hours.
This one I like. They questioned a lot of people who work in restaurants, and they like Americans because we are so friendly. We ask them for their recommendations. We right away say, how are you doing? Which kind of throws them off because they think that they're not there to have a personal conversation. They're just there to bring the food. But we're a very chatty, friendly people, and they like that.
Yeah, that seems... I think that's true, and we definitely do that. I wasn't aware that other people weren't friendly. I mean, frequently when you're in a foreign language, you don't understand, so you can't talk to the servers. But overall, I think we're pretty friendly with our servers.
And the other side of the coin in that, when we go to a restaurant, we expect to sit at our own table.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly in Europe, it's very common, if the restaurant is at all crowded, for someone else just to plop down at your table, even though you didn't necessarily ask them to be there. It's just a different approach.
Yes.
But they probably wouldn't expect to get into a big conversation with you.
Yeah.
They're there to eat.
Number 5, I was told Americans carry water bottles around like they are worried they will never have access to clean, clear water ever again. And boy, people carry around the largest and the biggest of the water bottles.
I carry
water with me.
Well, and in Asia, that could be true, where you would need a fresh water bottle. But
yeah,
certainly in Europe.
Well, not, but you don't need a giant one.
Europe, you can get it water anywhere that's clean enough for you to drink.
Smiling. Americans like to smile. I was in Germany this past summer, and I realized that smiling at everyone you make eye contact with is very American. When I went to London on the same trip, they seemed less weirded out, but it would be awkward to return the smile. I was taught always to start with a disarming smile, never realizing this was an American characteristic.
And this next one has to be yours, because you are an iceaholic.
Yeah, and Europeans just don't do ice. Well, most of the world just doesn't do ice. Like, I like to have ice. Like today, even. Even if it's cold outside, I like ice.
And they don't like to drink things that are that cold.
Oh, yeah.
Here we are on a gracious, sophisticated cruise ship, and he orders a glass of red wine, and then he throws an ice cube in it.
Shh! You're not supposed to tell anybody about
that. It's not cold enough.
Oh, jeez. Letting out the secrets.
How gauche.
And, of course, when we were in Vienna visiting your aunt.
She thought it would make you sick.
Well, not only that, but she rationed out the ice. I would get like one cube, which she had to make in her teeny tiny refrigerator, especially for me. I kind of felt bad, but
Not that bad.
Yeah. Personal space.
You take up a lot of room, this says.
As an American man, I've been told separately by European and Asian friends that we simply take up space as though we were entitled to it. Men in other countries apparently don't claim the same personal space as we do.
Manspreading, they call that.
And woman spreading?
No.
Women don't do that?
This is about men.
Huh.
Yeah.
White teeth.
They think that we all wear braces and bleach our teeth because our teeth are straight and white, which isn't necessarily the case. Some of us, like me, just have straight white teeth because God gave them to me.
Yeah, but I think a lot of kids wear braces, and certainly when you go overseas, you look at people's teeth and they're like, whoa.
Well, they can't afford it.
Well, or they didn't have the upbringing. Casual dress. Number 10, my friend went to Germany recently, and what people said about Americans is that you can spot them a mile away because they're the ones wearing pajamas
in public. That's gotten worse since COVID, I think.
Yeah, apparently in other countries, at least in Germany, they dress a little more formally and less baggy than Americans do, and I would definitely agree with that.
And another dead giveaway is baseball hats. We all wear them. We even put them on our babies in a buggy.
But baseball is an American sport, so there are no baseball caps in other countries, although they have caps like that, but they're not widely worn. Shoes. American are shoe snobs.
They don't think they are, but they are.
Ooh.
Setting aside wealthier business types, Americans generally wear more on-brand, on-trend, high-quality shoes than others. I don't know that that's the case.
Mm. I haven't noticed that either. Well, but because I'm an American, right. I wear decent shoes, but they're not. Well, we
on
wear
trend?
Skechers.
On
well,
trend?
I don't know.
We you wear don't Skechers. Care what's trendy, but that's because we're.
I don't care what's trendy, but I do care about the brand. I want it to be good quality. We're loud. Oh yes, I would agree with that.
Americans yell at each other in normal conversations in public. That's kind of embarrassing. We try not to do that.
And the last one, immediately asking someone what they do for a living when meeting them. Our jobs and work are our entire identity. Hmm.
And that's because we spend so much time at work. We were having a conversation
yes.
with our Aussie friends at dinner the other night, and typically an American has 2-3 weeks of vacation a year, where they get 2 or 3 months a year.
Paid.
Paid.
Well, I think it's every 2 or 3 years you
still,
get that kind of time. But
still.
They automatically get 4 weeks vacation.
And if you're not thinking
and then
about
every
your
few years
job
you get,
all yeah. the time, it's not so much part of your identity.
Yeah.
And that certainly makes it hard for people to retire because then when you have no job, you have no identity.
So your travel gurus and RV specialists have spoken their words for the month. We are very happy to hear from you. If you want to send us an email at rvnavigator.com. Otherwise, visit the website at rvnavigator.com and look for website for this episode number 231. Other than that, we will turn it over to next month, and we will be in a campground near you in Indiana in the middle of the month.
Sweating and getting our lithium batteries.
Sweating. It'll be 70 degrees, as it always is when we go camping.
Wherever we go.
Don't we wish.
Thanks.
But we hope to hear from you.
Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again in a month.
Bye now.